and welcome to the Popcorn Junkies.
Hi, Popcorn Junkies.
Mum, you haven't been here for ages.
No, it's not my fault.
Well, whose fault is it?
It's certainly not mine.
Anyway, the weirdest thing happened, right? I came in here to set up for us to do this review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire.
Mm.
And for the first time ever, my Dan Aykroyd action figure fell off the top shelf.
No way.
And landed on me, Mum.
No way.
Yes, if you think of the nature of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the kind of objects that are...
Yes.
Haunted. It really hit me. Okay, so this is a review of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. This is the fifth outing in the Ghostbusters franchise.
Is it really?
Yeah, there were the first two. Then there was the Paul Feig, was it, film with Melissa McCarthy and the kind of...
Oh, that got a huge
Saturday Night Live.
Criticism,
just kidding. Yeah, sort of cast, alumni. Mainly, there was a huge anti-woman thing about it, but I get annoyed about that because it was also... I just thought it was bad.
Oh, okay.
But
Mark
just,
thought it was good.
Well, Mark Kermode.
He thought it was criticised unfairly, and that's very strange, really.
Yeah, but Mark Kermode, I'd argue Mark Kermode doesn't get Ghostbusters. More about Mark Kermode in a while.
Mark Kermode.
Then there was Ghostbusters Afterlife that came, which was a sort of reboot or picking things up.
I love that.
I thought it was almost a quintessentially perfect family entertainment.
I would agree with you 100%.
And now there's this Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, which I think as you move through any franchise, the feeling that they're rinsing the IP or the intellectual property.
IP.
You know, the idea that they're kind of just trying to turn it into a cash cow.
Of course.
But hasn't that always been the case?
Yes.
So I think it's not surprising that this has got the most disastrous Rotten Tomatoes results. Though, at the moment, it has incredibly high audience scores. So
I was going to say, because there seem to be a lot of people in the cinema waiting to go and see it. One family behind us loved it.
It was quite busy. Yeah. Who have we got in this one? We've got a reprise of the original cast. We've got McKenna Grace in there as the young Phoebe Spengler. We've got Bill Murray. We've got the originals, Dan Aykroyd.
We've hardly got Bill Murray, but we've got...
We'll talk about that in a moment. We've also got Ernie Hudson, who plays Winston. They're the originals. We've got Carrie Coon. We've got Paul Rudd. Can't fail to mention we've also got Kumail Nanjiani.
I love him.
Who I've seen in a number of things. He was in The Big Sick. That was his...
That's where he claimed to be.
Yeah, and I think in a weird way, he's in this film very much as the kind of Rick Moranis kind of character.
Yeah.
And we've got... what's his face from Stranger Things? Finn Wolfhard, isn't it?
He didn't do a lot, actually.
Well, this is a really odd film. Because when I came out from it, and we'll talk obviously about it, I was left wondering who we'd spent most time with.
I know. I mean, actually, as I think about it...
Who did we spend most time with? Okay, well, let's talk about it as a concept. So the idea, what is the idea? The idea here is that essentially Dan Aykroyd runs this sort of place where people bring in possessed items or old items that perhaps have a possession. And in fact, Kumail Nanjiani brings in this odd orb that we've sort of seen in a flashback in the first scene of the film. This orb can create frozen empires.
I like that first scene.
I'll just give you the potted plot.
Okay, yeah.
And so the idea is that this orb is kind of accidentally triggered into opening the wealth of its kind of evil and malevolence, and essentially it frees every ghost they've ever caught and every ghost there is in the world, turns New York into a frozen sort of tundra, and then they all have to fight and get them all back into the box.
Thereby introducing and taking us up to the best joke of the whole film.
So that's the film. And so we start, you're right, let's talk about the first scene, Mum. We start in flashback, don't we? A good sort of 100 years or so ago, 150
yes,
years ago.
Yes, yes.
And what was that?
Well, I don't know, but I just love the idea of something freezing so hard it falls off. That came out wrong.
I know what you mean. I went to the Arctic with a guy whose penis froze off.
I knew you'd say that. I realised as I said it.
She's lost a tooth.
Yeah, so I keep having to repeat it.
So we have this great scene where the fire brigade of that day, were they the fire brigade?
Yeah, I love that, actually.
They're called into a room where all these sort of old men, but they're part of a sort of an American exploratory kind of whatever.
They're all
caught frozen. And in a corner, you see someone with chainmail on, sort of with this. It's a brilliant orb. It's a bit like Hellraiser's cube.
The orb was good.
But didn't it remind you of like almost the keys of a kind of typewriter?
Yeah, it did.
And it kind of goes.
But isn't there a famous thing like that?
There might be. Anyway, so this is frozen everything. So we've had it neat, simple. Very scary, and I liked the opening.
I did.
And then we join our family, don't we? Again, it's a blended family. We've got Paul Rudd, he's not really a stepdad, hasn't really been accepted by Phoebe, played by McKenna Grace. We've got Carrie Coon, who's the girlfriend. Now, the thing I liked about Afterlife was I thought the shtick between Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon was really good.
Yeah, I did.
And if I had one disappointment with this film, was I didn't really get much of that in this.
No, and I'll tell you something even more contentious. Is that, and it happened to me at about the same, exactly the same stage of the film as you're talking about, is that I started to think, I have never thought this in my life before, but Paul Rudd is getting on my nerves. He's not convincing me. He is not convincing me.
Oh.
Mr. Nice Guy, for once, who I last saw being an Ant-Man somewhere.
What
he's
sort
not
of cheeky, chappy, hangdog, throwing himself under the bus?
I felt in his performance, which is very unusual for me to say.
We did have a lot of... I mean, to be honest with you, I was going back to this idea of who did we spend most time with. I think we spent most time with McKenna Grace, the young girl.
Yeah, well, we did actually far more.
Yeah, I think alongside him, alongside her, we spent most time with Dan Aykroyd.
Quite a lot of time with Dan Aykroyd. Yeah, and I thought he was good.
I thought he was great. You feel like Dan Aykroyd hasn't grown up since Ghostbusters.
No, I mean, I was...
His body has, but his heart hasn't.
No, his heart hasn't, and I really loved him in this.
I loved him. Apart from he does have a bit of a sweaty top lip every now and then, and the makeup artist needs to be
shot.
Which was
very weird. Yeah. come and go.
So we had...
The person... Who we spent the most time with was the two girls, love interest.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we're with the family. We've got Finn Wolfhard. We've got the two kids. We've got the two adults. They've put up home. They're set up home in the Ghostbusters fire engine, fire station, which is so emblematic. I mean, I think the thing about Ghostbusters that's really tricky and I really liked about Afterlife was so many aspects of it are so emblematic and inherently nostalgic, whether it be the music. Not even just the song, but the kind of incidental music that's very kind of memorable, whether it be the locations like the fire station and the pole and the car and all that kind of stuff. And then obviously the suits and the kind of the blasters and all this kind of stuff, right down to Slimer, the ghosts that they're busting. I had a few causes for concern right at the beginning when we meet them all, don't we, as they're kind of on a ghost chase through New York, and they're chasing a very long, what looked like a sort of electric eel.
I think I'm with you.
I didn't like the ghost.
Neither did I.
Why didn't they just make that Slimer?
I know. Actually, yes, I'd almost even forgotten that at that point I was a bit worried.
Yes.
Because I thought, oh my God, that is not convincing me one bit. And if that's the first, which let's face it, should have been a bit of a mainstay, the first one.
Put it this way, I'm not a fan of the animal ghosts.
No.
Didn't need it.
No.
I think they could have had a bit more fun with that and that could have been a bit more interesting. And it was a very sort of bog standard street chase scene where they catch
I mean, I love the whole thing. I love the idea of they come out and they've got a thing. I like all of that.
Got the chair coming out.
Yeah,
she goes in.
Yeah, I love all of that.
But I tell you something that just didn't fire up for me in this film. The family dynamic didn't fire up. So I didn't feel them riffing off each other. I didn't feel that sort of. Even though we had a little bit of McKenna Grace not letting Paul Rudd in emotionally as the stepdad, and I felt this film needed a few more beats and a few more moments of kind of just inherent obvious comedy or character development and family development.
Or them being given something to do. I mean, maybe the trouble with the Paul Rudd, I started to think after I decided that it wasn't his fault, I'd gone off him. He's given nothing to do.
No, neither was Finn Wolfhard. I mean, Finn Wolfhard had about three scenes. No. I mean, I know Finn doesn't really want to be an actor, and it's maybe he just says, I'll do it, but I'm only doing three scenes.
Yeah.
Really, this is McKenna Grace's film, and really this is a film about a lesbian romance at the centre of it, where she, through various means, accesses the spirit over a game of chess in Washington Square.
Of nice a ghost. Touch, I thought.
Yeah, I thought that was nice. A ghost played by Emily Allen Lind.
Oh.
Well, I kept thinking it was Olivia Cookman. Well, I really liked her.
Yeah.
I liked the ghost love interest.
Yeah, you liked her more than me, but then I grew to love her.
What did you think of them having right front and centre of this film a lesbian love interest?
Well, I mean, what can I say? I mean, I totally approved.
It was quite
good.
Bold, quite brave.
Bold, yeah.
It didn't overplay it.
No.
You felt how this is an unrequited love. Surely she's on one plane of existence
exactly.
And she's on another.
Exactly.
But there was something nice about it. But then, of course, it transpires that what's happening here is that the ghost, played by Emily Allen Lind, is leading McKenna Grace astray. Okay, so we get to the point where this orb has been handed in, and I think by this point for me Kumail Nanjiani, for me he was the guilty pleasure. He was increasingly the guilty pleasure throughout.
It was increasingly the guilty pleasure for me as well, plus who was another huge guilty pleasure. Ooh. But wasn't in it for long enough was the librarian
played by Patton Oswalt.
I loved
big
him.
Big shout out. His scene was sensational.
Yeah, I wanted him on screen more. I wanted
Absolutely.
Him back.
I think these films are at their best when they really go into that whole library research, look at the original manuscripts, check out the hieroglyphs, related to a story. I mean, there was a quite an extended animated sequence,
yeah,
which I thought was done quite niftily.
Yeah,
I liked it.
I did.
And I thought it was quite bold to illustrate the sort of, what is it, the myth or the history or the arcane history of what's going on and why this orb that effectively was in the back room of Kumail's sort of nan's place.
Yeah.
What I think is quite funny about this film is it reminded me of the first film where you had in a relatively new city all these ancient antechambers and rooms, which didn't make sense. And also the other weird thing about this film is the last film, which I think was set in Oklahoma, you'd have thought that this film would have been riffing on more nostalgic buttons because, of course, it was set back in New York.
Yeah.
And I think I felt this film trying quite hard with the library scene, with the station. You know, they're trying to revisit so many of the moments, I think, those classic moments.
They worked for me, though.
I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, in a weird way, this was kind of like, this and the other film were kind of like obviously nostalgic trips down memory lane. And I think I didn't mind Dan Aykroyd being in there a lot.
No, I didn't either. I loved the way, and I've not thought this before. You mention it a lot, but sometimes I don't even know what you mean.
Yes.
But I did in this, the sort of look of it.
The colour.
The fact it looks so aged somehow.
Well, they do make it look 80s, and I think the last film did that really well. And it's a kind of, I don't know whether they've added a grain or a grade in there that does that. But they use that colour palette that's that green and that red from the original.
But I mean, the cars look good and look old, and the buildings and the way that people move and... Even the crowd scenes, I think, are quite well done.
Yeah. So effectively, McKenna Grace, the young girl, and Finn Wolfhard and Dan Aykroyd, they kind of become a sort of offshoot from Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon, because they're not allowed to kind of ghostbust because she's too young, basically.
Yeah.
So you've got all of that narrative. I wasn't really interested in the original mayor. There was a lot of excitement around the mayor of the city being... I thought that was a bit eggy.
Is his name William Atherton?
William Atherton. It felt like we were all supposed to...
He was still alive.
But the way they sort of cut to him, I thought we were all meant to sort of in the cinema go, oh, it's him, but he's not a big enough character to feel that with.
No, although I felt quite fond of him, actually.
Oh, okay. And so we move through and, you know, now, a quick shout out. There's a particular scene which I really liked, or a particular location in which the actor James Acaster,
who's the sort of English-British scientist. Yeah.
They take them into this brilliant sort of antechamber, and it's almost like it's like a zoo for ghosts.
They're
experimenting on them, they're testing them, and then we have this sort of little red light that's called possession, which zips about and moves things around.
Yeah, nice idea.
I like that whole sort of scene, because that's kind of where they take this globe in the end, this sphere,
yeah,
and then the sphere kind of unleashes the beast that is this great big horny beast. Tall horny beast at 12.
To your left,
which I thought was great.
Yeah.
What did you think of the look of it and the sort of the... Did you find the monster frightening? Were you excited?
I mean, frightening enough. And I mean, he looks sort of like Middle Eastern, Egyptian sort of weird...
What are you saying,
Mike?
You're saying Middle Eastern and Egyptians are scary?
Well, yeah, and also not a spider, which was the main sort of
point. Most things are spiders, Mum.
Spider-like, aren't they? And that wasn't.
So I like the way he screwed... Oh, no, he didn't screw. He sunk the horns into his head with metal spikes. I like that.
Yeah, I liked him altogether.
Yeah, and then we had Kumail Nanjiani's character begins to discover that really he's the gatekeeper? No, he's the fire starter. He's the fire maker.
He's a fire maker. And he was so pleased.
Yeah, but he did a really good job of really taking the piss out of himself and the plot and him trying to be able to make light that candle. Now, something I want to take umbrage with Mark Kermode on.
Okay.
In his review, which was absolutely eviscerating, he just destroyed it. He hated it. Hated every second of it. But he's clearly hated every single Ghostbuster there's been, apart from the one that was least like Ghostbusters, which tells you everything.
Interesting.
But in his most recent review, check it out, he says, oh, this film is awful. And he cites this reason. He says, we do a little bit of a scene of action, go back to Bill Murray. A little bit of scene of action, go back to Bill Murray. Action, Bill Murray. It's a lie.
Yeah.
Bill Murray is in this film on three occasions.
Yeah.
Three occasions.
Yeah.
They don't rely on him too much. He delivers only a couple of lines, only one of which was really funny.
Yeah.
There's one really funny scene where he's testing Kumail Nanjiani and he's throwing pens at him.
Yeah,
which was hysterical.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a hysterical
scene. It's almost
like
they just left him alone to do that.
And of course there's that sort of scene with him doing a similar thing, almost like the kind of lie detector thing where he's trying to work out his answers to questions.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought Bill Murray was very sort of... backgrounded in this.
Well, I've wondered if there's something wrong with him or something, or he hadn't agreed to do a full part. He was so Nothing.
I think he's always been a bit begrudging about doing too much of it.
Yeah, no, so, I think you're right.
But the only reason I've got that gripe is that I hate it when a reviewer actually is inaccurate, because that is not a fair description. Yeah. This film doesn't overly rely on Bill Murray. It might not be the funniest entry in the five Ghostbusters. It might not be the most successful. But it certainly isn't trying to lean on the Bill Murray-ness of Bill Murray all the way through it, if anything.
Not at all. The opposite.
Quite the opposite. It's Dan Aykroyd's film, in a way.
Yeah, it is, in a way. But it was funny. It was also weird to me that Bill Murray was in it so little.
Yeah.
I mean, I wanted him... I mean, even if he was not particularly effective, which he wasn't, and even if he looked like 100, which he did... I wanted him in it more.
I wanted a bit more of him, to be honest with you, because we had a lot more of Ernie Hudson and we had a lot more of Dan Aykroyd. What did you think? Now, in the trailer reactions, I was not convinced by the whole idea of the Frozen thing. Did the Frozen thing convince you?
Sort of did.
Did it?
Yeah.
I don't know if it did me. What I thought was a bit stupid was they overcomplicated things for themselves, because I think it's all about believability in this
fantasy. Yeah, no, that's true.
When they had the spikes that kept coming through, I didn't believe in a month of Sundays that all the spikes would have missed all our key cat. Do you know what I mean? It's a weird thing to introduce.
No, I wouldn't disagree with that. Yeah, I thought the spikes, yeah.
And you didn't need the stalactites or stalagmites, whichever they are, that stick up, because that kind of added a level of jeopardy that made you not believe it. There was real jeopardy because none of it got anywhere near any of the characters. So it didn't actually they didn't skewer anyone.
That's well put.
Do you know what I mean? I think there's the Coney Island, the beach thing?
And
you see the sea, obviously riffing on Jaws whilst they're out there. So I wasn't convinced by the Frozen thing. I wasn't convinced by some of the choices around the ghosts. I think with Ghostbusters, you can lean on Slimer and all those kind of ghosts more. Yeah. And I think they threw him away, really. He was just in the attic chewing through food.
You're right, actually.
I thought the monster was nicely designed and villainous, but I thought the final standoff in the fire station, it went on.
Yeah.
It wasn't particularly original.
No.
And they were all just like that for ages. And then, of course, Kumail Nanjiani's character came in and he was very funny as he's kind of fireballing and all this kind of stuff. But I didn't really believe the jeopardy in it.
No, no.
And it's not, of course, you don't believe any of it. But what you want to do on these films, you want to kind of be taken to a place of, form of excitement. And I didn't really buy into it. But
I'd have to say the girls' relationship as well got, after not taking to it originally, it got me then, and then
the romance,
and then I felt sad as she wandered off into the frozen north.
Well, the fact that how it remained unrequited.
Yes.
I did too. I thought McKenna Grace was good, the young girl. I mean,
I did, and I really wasn't sure about her at all.
She's got such a sort of cartoon character face, hasn't she?
Sweet little face.
Finn Wolfhard barely in there. Bill Murray, as I say, Paul Rudd. I have to give a shout out to the funniest moment for me, or one of the funniest moments in the film, was his exchange with Carrie Coon.
Which was?
When he starts to speak the lines of the song.
Oh,
when you're feeling safe and in the neighbourhood. I think that was Paul Rudd at his best.
Yeah,
and
it was.
But that was his best moment. And what was it? Really, just reading the lyrics of the song. A huge shout out to Patton Oswalt's moment was fantastic. And I thought the lion outside the library was a nice set piece.
Oh, that was a good one. That was one of my favourite moments, actually.
So I think there were some nice little set pieces. I think they had the right ingredients in place. It didn't entertain me as much as the last one. It certainly came nowhere near the first Ghostbusters.
No.
It had a nice smattering of tiny little Stay Puffed marshmallow
men. Oh, the marshmallow men.
I mean, I have to say, stay for the mid-credit moment, because there's nothing more satisfying than seeing a little tiny Stay Puffed marshmallow man shove a cigarette lighter from the car into its face.
I know.
So sweet. They're into self-harm, those little fuckers.
They're very, very sweet.
Logan Kim added nothing for me, who's the young boy who was with them running around. I didn't get him at all.
Absolutely.
Celeste O'Connor, she was in there, but nothing really. It had too many characters in it. I think it needed a few more moments where it was just funny. Okay, if you had to sum it up and give it a score, what would you give it?
Well, having been, first of all, not going to go with the brief girl and girls scene, but then deciding that I did like them.
Yeah.
And I like the ghost particularly.
Yeah, the ghost girl.
The ghost girl.
Yeah.
And so that sort of got me there. I mean, I was going to say they could have relied on that more, but they did rely on it a lot.
Yes.
But we needn't have had all the individual little characters, like you say, the boy and the other girl.
I would have dropped a few of the other characters so we could have spent a bit more time with Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon.
Yeah.
I mean, because they were excellent in the last film.
Yeah, they were given nothing to do in this, weren't they? I like the whole idea, concept of freezing. I like freezing a lot. And I like the Robert Frost poem at the beginning.
Oh, yeah, Robert Frost.
Fire and ice, all the way.
Wow.
And
And his name's Robert Frost.
I know, it's so funny, isn't it? And Yes, and then I loved the look of it, and I kept thinking, New York, New York, this is how it looked when I first went.
Yes.
Yeah, all the things that were supposed to work, William Atherton suddenly being, worked for me, so I must have been in the right mood.
I was more excited about seeing the cab driver from the first film look up.
Yeah.
I like that.
But the librarian was a guilty pleasure for me. I thought he was wonderful.
So good.
I have seen him before in things, but he's never used enough.
He's so good.
And altogether, I would give it 59.
Okay. You know, for me, it was nothing will be as bad as my experience of watching the one with all the Saturday Night Live people in it. And it wasn't because they were women, and it wasn't because... But they didn't get the Ghostbusters thing.
No.
It was trying to be something else. And that's fine, but it wasn't for me. Ghostbusters 2, the original Ghostbusters 2, was an absolute waste of space. The first one, Ghostbusters Afterlife, was a wonderful return to the world and to everything. This one didn't succeed for me in the same way. I felt it was too dispersed around all the characters. It didn't allow enough ensemble development. I think I could have done with more of Finn, McKenna, and Paul and Carrie's, just their family dynamic would have been enough.
Then
bring in the original Ghostbusters. I think Dan Aykroyd availed himself really nicely. You felt a sort of...
He worked overtime, actually, in a way.
He did, but that child within and him wanting to still do this for the rest of his life, I thought was sweet. You know, it spoke to him being involved in the original. He was a big part of the producing of it and the idea and all that kind of stuff. Kumail Nanjiani really is the kind of... That's where the real humour sits in it.
Yeah, I like him a lot.
But, you know, I don't think it's as bad as I think people are making out.
No.
I think people have gone really hard on it. So if I was to score this, I would probably give this... What do you say, 59? I think I'd give it 63.
Very close.
63.
Very close to me.
But it's hugely entertaining and great fun.
And they do a thing at the end in memoriam too.
Yeah, it's memory of Ivan Reitman, who obviously was the director.
Yeah.
Anyway, guys, tell us what you think.
Tell us what you think.
See if you agree.